following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be a part of the show, call 334-321-1390 or text in at 334-784-1067. The boys are bringing you all the action on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. When it comes to the Tigers, the SEC, and the hottest topics in sports, this is where you want to be.
The position group that Auburn feels the best about still doesn't have the national love. It's Friday when you're on the line.
Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, straight from the ESPN 106.7 studio, here's Kristen Griffin and Trip Upton.
Yes, welcome in. It is Friday, in the Friday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7. I'm Christian Griffin here with you in the studio on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. July 10th, double digits already into the month of July, and this time next Friday, we will be having legitimate conversations about the next time we get on air. It will be live from Tampa, Florida, from SEC Media Days. We are so excited. We had all of our the sponsors make their way out for national readings with our guys. So excited to be able to run those promotions here coming up soon. And for everybody that was a part and had their hand in getting us back to SEC Media Days, a big time thank you. But we'll be able to talk a little bit more about that as today goes on, as next week rolls along, and obviously as SEC Media Days rolls along. But I mentioned it, man. Happy Friday. Hopefully you feel the same way that I do in terms of happy for the weekend, but hopefully not as stressed for the weekends. Obviously, the weekend's always a little bit less stressful, but hoping that our weekend is going to be relatively stress-free. It's what we need after quite the day here this afternoon. But I'm Christian Griffin. I welcome in my man, Trip Upton, sitting across from me as well. I haven't called you the rookie in quite some time, and so I don't know. Maybe you're not the seasoned vet by any means,
no.
But you're now past the two-week, the three-week, and now the four-week stage. And so I can finally shake your hand and have a little bit of respect for it. And I'm
sure.
Playing. Happy Friday. hopefully all is well after an eventful day so far here today.
Oh, yeah. It's been a day, certainly. We are a little bit inside baseball. We are doing some moving around and some stuff in our sales room. And because of that, somehow it ended up with me having to sit there for 20 minutes with a chair headrest that we had to try and Gorilla Glue back onto the chair.
Heck yeah.
So that was kind of interesting. Shout out our the head man, Steve Witten. He assigned me that task for a little bit and then proceeded to, in an expression, like making an expression, because he talks with his hands a lot. If you didn't know, you would never know that unless you saw him in person, knocked off the headrest that had been just Gorilla Glued
Ooh.
On that he asked me to do. So I was giving him some grief about that. But no, happy Friday. Yesterday felt like such a Friday. And so getting to do some sports talk radio with you, my friend, is definitely it feels like a bonus day on the end of the week. So I am.
We didn't get it last week, so we get the bonus episode here this week
to mentally
make up
sure.
for it.
Yes, but it's been a good week, and hoping that we can end it off right the way we're supposed to.
Yeah, we're going to have a lot of fun here this afternoon, counting you down to the weekend getting started, talking about ESPN, the FPI rankings, kind of liking the Auburn Tigers. Talk a little bit about that in hour number two, but how people are still underrating Auburn's running back room, although that's one that you feel like Auburn has the most confidence in because of the numbers in that room, the overall talent, just you feel as if running the football, not only is that going to be a priority, as Alex Golish has mentioned multiple times, Byron Brown, you feel like indirectly is a piece of that running back room just based off of his dual threat ability when you have the quarterback keeper and also the scrambling factor as well. But Auburn's running back room still not getting love in terms of the national media as one of the best running back rooms in the country. We have a list for you that we will dissect and talk about how we feel like the Auburn Tigers need to be at least somewhere in that list. But we start today's show with a little bit of the perfect talking season. Believe it or not, that is what we are in the middle of. And so it's a lot of our topics that we have on our rundown that end in question marks.
Sure.
And you feel like that is a lot of what these past couple of weeks, the past month or so, has been. A lot of the question marks that make it open-ended conversations, not only for us, but for you as well. And if you would like to be a part of today's show, phone lines are open for the entirety of it, all from 2 to 4 right here. You can give us a call at 334-321-1390. Any quick hitters, anything you have. If you're still staggered in the office for a little bit longer, I know you got your AirPods in. I know you got it pulled up on the Radio Alabama app. But if you don't trust yourself to make the phone call quite yet, text box is always open as well at 334-784-1685. And we do start with a little bit of, not quite a hypothetical, but a little bit of the what ifs, what needs to happen, and those types of conversations. Because you feel as if this Auburn Tiger team, as if Alex Golish, a lot of the South Florida players, but then also just Auburn in general, based off the lack of success that it has had over the last couple of years, I say couple, professionally we'll say a couple of years, but which position group has the most to prove? And I think we can talk about every single one of them, what they want to be able to prove. But I think it's a fascinating topic to think about which Auburn position group has the most to prove, whether that's making their way from South Florida, whether that's the freshman you feel like needs to prove his spot at a certain position group. And then just overall, which Auburn team, which Auburn group needs to have the most talent for this Auburn team to have a whole lot of fun here in Jordan-Hare Stadium and on the road this year in 2026. Again, if you have thoughts, give us a call, 334-321-1390. And your opening thoughts before we really dive into this, because I think this is such a fun topic because there's so many different ways you can go about it, so many right answers, not really any wrong answers. It really comes down to interpretation.
Sure. I mean, I definitely, there's a couple position groups that jump out to me, and I'm sure we're going to be able to dive deeper into those as we discuss this. But I think I'm confident in saying it's not the special teams group. I mean, I think Alex McPherson is still a top-end kicker when healthy. I know that he has obviously had those health issues. Obviously, none of that his control. And he's worked his rear end off to really get back and be a part of this team and be a top-end kicker in the SEC, which I believe he is, and a top-end kicker in college football and will be in the NFL if he so chooses to, as well as Hudson Cock, the punter, the Buta, very good punter, and he's going to be
friend of the show.
Friend of the show, absolutely. And so I'm not worried necessarily about the special teams, but I think every other position group, just with the newness on the team, new regime, new talent at almost every position, there's a lot of question marks and exclamation points for every position on the field.
Yeah, and so I guess we'll start this by more of the what we think each position group is trying to prove, and then we'll end this conversation with who we think has the most to prove in 2026. And for the quarterbacks, I think the biggest thing is that would be if you go ask maybe just blindly, if you're not looking at Byron Brown in specifics, but you look at Auburn over the last handful of years and it's, okay, what has been the position group that has been the most lackluster, the most unimpressive? I think there would be a silent majority, if not a very outspoken majority, that would say the quarterback room. It has been very underwhelming. It has been a very frustrating topic of conversation to have to think about because, man, you feel like you've had the names, you've had the at least talent prior to coming to the Auburn Tigers, and maybe it wasn't quite polished yet, but it was, okay, if this guy can just be a middle-tier SEC quarterback, if you sit there and you give him a report card at the end of the year and it's, all right, C+, or it's just B- at flat minimum, you feel like Auburn would have a pretty good year. We talked about that yesterday with Chris Gordy and how he had talked with a couple of the guests on his show yesterday, and they said he went back and looked at their preseason quarterback rankings last year and had Jackson Arnold at 9th. And it was like, man, if Auburn had the 9th best quarterback in the SEC last year or the year before, man, you feel like that would at least lead to a win, if not two wins, if not three more wins into the win column each and every single year, yet you feel like every single year you continue to drift, and it's not even middle tier. You're sitting there looking at 13th, 14th, 15th, or 16th, when you pair that with the rest of your team, it just doesn't feel like it makes a lot of sense. And so I feel like from the fan perspective, the quarterback room blindly would be the one that I think most fans would pick as the one that has the most reason for improvement.
Yeah, I mean, looking at what Auburn, even historically, has looked like at the quarterback position,
sure.
In terms of passing yards, only 2 3,000-yard passers in a season with Demoon Craig in 1997 and then Jared Stidham.
Oh, man, you just showed your youth right there.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Damian Craig?
Damian Craig, yes, sorry. when he was slinging it for the Tigers 6 years before I was even a thought, so I can't really...
Holy cow.
Yeah, make you feel old.
Yeah, I was going to say, you just pissed somebody off driving home. Yeah,
apologies, but no, and as well as Jared Stidham, I do know that name, and he, in 2017, only two people to do it. Cam Newton fell short of that at 2,800, so looking at what Byron Brown could do, if he can get... close to that 3,000-yard number, as well as having some rushing yards as well, Auburn could really be a guy that could prove it. And looking at the position group as a whole, I would like to see what Tia and the rest of the quarterback room could do there. And I really think that the opportunity for when you have some of these games like – I'm not going to sit here and say, you know, for what Auburn has been in the past and what they've pulled in some of these games of, hey, man, Samford or any of the other, like Southern Miss, that, I mean, they should have the backups in at the third and fourth quarters.
That was our favorite word last year.
They should. But I think that, you know, you could see Tristan Tia really be the far and away this guy is the next step. This guy is the QB2. I'd really like to see that, especially knowing that over the past couple years, Auburn hasn't had that clear number two or clear future plan. We thought we had it with Deuce Knight, and he ended up transferring. Before that, I mean, you were a year-by-year basis. I mean, Hank Brown didn't leave a lot to be desired in his few starts, even though he was kind of viewed as the potential. Walker White mm-hmm. never saw true infield or like on-field action until he was to transfer and didn't even see action at Baylor last season. Robbie Ashford was supposed to be the next guy up after the Bo Nix, TJ Finley, Brian Harsin question mark era. But even then, I mean, they haven't really had a guy on the roster in a long time that you said, okay, this guy is the next guy up. I mean, Bo Nix coming in as a true freshman.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he wasn't on the roster, but he was like the next guy up, quote unquote, if you want to go that far. And we could go back further and further if we really wanted to.
I mean, you could go back, and I think you mentioned the name for me, but it's the question of, man, you ask an Auburn fan, and again, this is more so Auburn of entirety rather than diving into this year's team. We'll get to that here momentarily, but when you look at just the quarterback room as a whole throughout history, you go and you ask Auburn fans who sit there and call themselves diehard fans and watch every single game and know every single player like we do, and it's, okay, when was the last time there was a quarterback that dropped back in the pocket and you felt comfortable? The last time that somebody took a snap and wasn't planning on taking off,
ooh,
but sat in the pocket, looked downfield, and you said, okay, all right, receiver, do your job, quarterback will do his job. And it's either going to be an incomplete pass or a completion. You don't have to worry about a big-time overthrow. You don't have to worry about an interception. You don't have to worry about... and I know the offensive line plays a factor in this, but you don't have to worry about running into a sack or whatever the case may be. The fact that even with Bo, you didn't feel that?
No.
Obviously because the offensive line, and you have seen what he looks like behind a competent one, but Stidham, for me, is the last time that there's been a quarterback for the Auburn Tigers, and don't even get me started or Jacob started on why he decided to come to Auburn, because he didn't get better when he was at Auburn. He was a heck of a quarterback before he came to Auburn. And that was the Art Briles-Baylor situation stuff that he decided to get out of. But we're not going to sit here and act like Auburn got better at the quarterback position because, or I guess, Auburn got better. We're not going to act like Stidney got better when he was at Auburn. It was just the fact that he was a good pocket passer and he had enough mobility to make it work. But you haven't really had that. And the fact that you sit there and say 2017 is the last time, or I guess 18 as well, was the last time that Auburn felt comfortable with a quarterback dropping back.
I mean, last 3,000-yard passer. And I think also a discussion has to be had, though, in Jared Stidham's defense and in some of these quarterbacks' defenses, is that the wide receiver room has not been anything special. Do you want to know?
Would you take a fantastic quarterback and a mediocre receiver room, or would you take a great receiver room and a mediocre quarterback?
I mean,
I think Auburn's had that answer.
I guess that is a good point. Now, we could also talk, play calling also matters, because I think Auburn had that last year.
Very much so.
And they had probably the best wide receiver room in the country going into the season, and a guy that had the tools to be a top or an average quarterback, but were calling, you know, bubble screens backed up to their own end zone on 2nd and 19. But look, I mean, Auburn, only 2 1,000-yard seasons from a wide receiver, none since I've been alive, if that tells you anything, with Ronnie Daniels in 99 and Terry Beasley, whose numbers retired in 1970. So I think that also does play a factor. Yes, they've had talent. They've had guys like Sammy Coates, KLS, Cam Coleman, Eric Singleton, Perry Thompson, Malcolm Simmons. The list goes on and on of guys that have been good enough to do that. Darvin Adams fell short twice in 2009 and 2010. But
that's one of those games. Name every Auburn receiver off the top. Oh yeah, that's a fantastic conversation.
Is that a Tampa conversation on the ride down there?
That's a 100% a Tampa conversation on the way down, and then that is a Friday afternoon special gearing up for college football season of, yes, name me every single Auburn football receiver, and you have 30 seconds to do so, and we're going to have a timer, and we're just going to go round-robin style.
Sure.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, but no, I think that looking at the quarterback history, because I was, as someone that was removed from the Auburn, like, bias in terms of when Bo Nix was playing.
Sure.
Because I was a massive Bo Nix believer. From his first game, that touchdown against Oregon, just I saw something that I was like, this guy can be a NFL quarterback. And even with people that I knew that were in more tapped into Auburn at that time, because again, I was in Atlanta watching 3-9 football. It was a very much like a, how do you guys not love this guy? He's a legacy quarterback, and there was some frustration there, that the turnovers, and I understand that. But yeah, I wouldn't say that looking back would be the most comfortable, because for every beautiful touchdown he'd have a interception or like a fumble or something. So Stidham's a good answer. And then even before that, I mean, looking back, you could talk back to Cam. I mean, Nick Marshall was good, but what made Nick Marshall so great is that
it wasn't dropping back and throwing the football. I can tell you that much.
Right. It's him and Trey Mason effectively doing a early version of an RPO.
Yeah.
And then Cam Newton was great, but he was also liable to take off. I mean, the last true pocket passer, I mean, Jason Campbell.
And even not a pocket passer, you felt comfortable when Cam dropped back, just because the decision-making and the raw athleticism that fit. But just I feel like when we're talking about which position group has the most to prove, I think quarterback, generically speaking, for Auburn definitely makes that work.
Do you want to know who's fifth all-time in single-season passing yards at Auburn?
It's probably Peyton Thorne.
It's Peyton Thorne.
Yeah.
With two in the 2024 year. The top five, Damian Craig with 3,000, Jared Stidham with 3,100, like 3,100, Cam with 2,800, Stidham 2018. So he had two top seasons.
Yes.
So I that proves your point of one of the best pure passers in Auburn history with 2,700. Then Peyton Thorne with about 70 yards behind him.
Yeah, I remember if he did anything in the bowl game, he was going to pass. Or a bowl game. That's all we're trying to get to here.
Yeah.
I remember because, again, that A&M game that he had was great. That was, again, the the four overtime game where it was like the Peyton Thorne legacy game. And it was like, if he did anything against Alabama or if they made it to the bowl and did anything there, then he could have, yeah, he could have passed Auburn for like, or could have passed Stidham for like fourth all time. And it's like, doesn't really feel good saying something like that.
Right. But no, I think that the quarterback, Byron Brown, what he could do record books wise with what Alex Golish would want to do in this offense, if he can bring a passing attack where if it gets to anything longer than third and four, you're not just assuming the punt's coming.
Sure.
If you could get to that point where it's like, even if it's like a, man, they can get a look here, or even be effective throwing the ball in early downs.
That's great. That's a crazy thought.
I know. Along with the run game, I think that that room could prove a lot and get more quarterbacks looking the way of Auburn instead of, they really haven't had a ton. It's very much a revolving door to, maybe I can come here and compete for a starting job and win and be a good passer, put up good numbers, and go play at the next level.
Here on this Friday afternoon, we'll take our first break. And when we come back, we'll continue this conversation more generically speaking at first and then making our way into which Auburn position group this year has the most to prove. Give us a call, 334-321-1390, or shoot us a text in the on-the-line text box at 334-784-1685. We'll continue this conversation on the other side right after this.
From revolution to rockets, from dusty frontiers to city skylines, these are the moments that shaped America. This is the American Minute, presented by Bucks Island. September 1814. The War of 1812 raged. British warships bombarded Fort McHenry through the night. Explosions lit the sky over Baltimore Harbor. Watching nearby was a young lawyer named Francis Scott Key. All night long, rockets burst overhead. When the morning arrived, Key searched through the smoke. Still flying above the fort, the American flag. Inspired by what he saw, Key began writing a poem. A poem that would become America's national anthem. One more moment that shaped the country we call home. This American Minute is presented by Bucks Island. Family owned and operated, serving boaters since 1948. Online at bucksisland.com.
You're on the line with Kristen Griffin and Trip Upton. If you want to be a part of the show, call 334-321-1390 or text us at 334-784-1067.
All right, we're back here on this Friday afternoon. Appreciate everybody for spending a little time with us. He's Trip Upton. I'm Christian Griffin. And talking about which Auburn position group has the most to prove and kind of taking a different angle than we had initially planned on to get the afternoon started of looking a little bit more kind of at like Auburn in its entirety of the quarterback position, the running back room, the receivers, the offensive and the defensive line, and what do they want to continue to prove or what's the overall mindset right now. And then we'll flip that into for 2026, which position group has the most to prove. And I don't think it's necessarily the most pressure to prove, but just who comes in with the chip on their shoulder and wants to be able to have a big time say in what goes on in 2026. And we talked a lot about the quarterbacks, and I know that you just looked up some more stats that were insane to even think about in terms of what Byron Brown did. But I want to take a pause for a moment on the quarterback discussion and kind of look elsewhere. I will also skip the running back room because
yeah,
I don't think that's much of a conversation for right now. I also don't think that's much of a conversation for later on when we're talking about which group has the most to prove, because I don't really see pressure or the need to prove anything for the Auburn running back room. I guess if anything, it's more individuals like Bryson Washington wants to make that step up. Nakai Davenport wants to make the step up. Jeremiah Cobb wants to prove that he can be the year-long back rather than being the running back two for the first
Omar Mabson
two or three seasons, or
Alvin
two or three
Henderson
games.
Yeah, prove they're the future.
Right, but when you look at that group as a whole, by no means historically or this year am I looking at it going, yeah, I don't know if I have confidence in what they are going to do. And so
they're
going to
produce if the team around them continues to produce, which is what the conversation we're having right now.
And right now, even when the rest of the offense didn't produce, the running back room still did. And so, again, we will pause on the quarterbacks. We'll pause on the running backs for right now. when you look at the offensive line, I think there's obviously questions historically. There's been a lot of Auburn fans, all of us, you feel like included, just in terms of that was fantastic, by the way.
Yeah. We have the Belgium-Spain game on, and there was a man in a full Viking outfit dancing on the screen for the Belgium Red Devils.
Yeah, that was pretty awesome. Yeah, that was the epitome of. I saw that out of the corner of my eye and had to look up and watch. But offensive line, again, we've all fallen for the Auburn can have a top five offensive line unit in the country, or Auburn can have a top five offensive line, at least in the SEC, and you've seen what that looked like. And annoyingly enough, even as bad as last year's was, they were a fantastic run blocking units. They were really, really good at half of what their assignments were, but the other half not so much. When Auburn led the country in sacks allowed, 40 plus, which that in itself, you divide that by 12. Thankfully, we don't have to divide that by a 13 or 14 because we didn't have to worry about playing a 13th or 14th game. Yeah, but offensive line, again, I think there is a lot that needs to be proven in that, and I think 2026 can do so, especially considering there were six draft-graded prospects last year in the offensive line room, and it was, okay, look at what this could be. Look at what this could be if it all works out. They just need to gel together. It's going to be fine. And even in the spring game, when we were up in the press room watching it, and it was like, okay, either the offensive line is really bad or the defensive line is just absolutely gross. And we took a little bit more of the route of, yeah, this defensive line is just really, really good, which they were. Yet I think it rounds out to a little bit of both can be true at the same time. Defense last year, again, a defensive line, I guess, especially. I think that's a unit historically that has no issues whatsoever, at least not a year-by-year basis. Linebacker room has been a little bit thin, especially during my lifetime, at least as of late. You've always had the one guy, but if he gets hurt, we've had those conversations on the show. What does that look like if their number one goes down? We'll have a little conversation on that here coming up of, okay, if Xavier Atkins, God forbid, goes down, who's going to be the two and three that step up? In the secondary, I would say, historically, has been relatively solid as well.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think defensively, they can really compete and continue to – they have a lot of young players because, that I will say, keeping Durkin with his recruiting as well as the Freeze recruiting, they kept a lot of the talent. I know they lost guys like Malik Blockton, but a lot of the guys they kept are young. If they continue to with another year in the system – they can be guys that we're talking about on NFL Draft Thursdays, not just Friday, Saturday.
Yeah, day ones, day two type of guys. You feel like there's the potential for it. We'll take our break. Music kicking us out of here. We'll flip to the present day, 2026. Which Auburn position group has the most to prove this year? And we'll talk about that when we come back.
You're on the line, and we're just 30 minutes in. Now back to the studio with Kristen Griffin and Trip Upton on ESPN 106.7.
Minutes into the free-for-all Friday edition of On the Line. Appreciate everybody for being here with us. He's Trip Upton. I'm Christian Griffin, and we work our way to the present day. Talked a little bit more in regards to historically what we have seen and which the strengths and the weaknesses for each position group. And it now makes our way into, again, 2026, in which Auburn position group has the most to prove. And we talked a little bit about, again, blindly, you feel like the quarterback room is one that you would like to see improvement. We got a text in the on-the-line text box, which you can always be a part of at 334-784-1685. That says, I think most of the sacks last year were because of the quarterback, and I don't completely disagree with that. I know that a lot of the times it was the amount of get rid of the football that we yelled at the TV, I think is definitely a factor. I think play calling shows the confusion on that side of things. But even being, what would you say that was the sixth most sacked team in the country like last year. And
top, like, yeah, from where you look, like 6th to like 13th.
And I know that like double digit sacks were like under 2.5 seconds of drop back time, which that's almost, especially with the Hugh Freeze slow developing offensive plays, sometimes it was very much just like the, okay, by the time he even looked up, like, there's not a chance of getting the football out. But looking at Byron Brown in the quarterback room, I would not say that I would put him as the position group to have the most to prove. I think there is obviously a lot to improve, or to prove, not to improve, but I think for Byron Brown, it's much more of a personal reason. It's to prove that he can play in the SEC, to get that draft stock up, to get what needs to be there, because yes, 3,000 yards, 1,000 yards is what you want to see. Sorry, last year, 3,000 passing, 1,000 rushing. That would set all sorts of records in terms of what Auburn was trying to do, and all sorts of records for what Auburn has done throughout its history. But I wouldn't say that Byron Brown is a position that needs to prove the most here in 2026, unless you say otherwise.
No, I don't. I mean, I think that he could – what Byron Brown needs to be focused on is setting the record books on fire. His season last season, this is the stat that I found a couple minutes ago, and this is just to put context on how good he was. He had 3,000 passing yards last season with USF. That would tie him for second with Jared Stidham all time. If you look at his rushing yards, he had 1,000 rushing yards. You add those together, and in total offensive yards in a season, that would put him second all time behind, you know, someone that I think was pretty good at Auburn, Cam Newton, in the 2010 season. I think that was a pretty good season, all things considered. Wouldn't you agree, Christian?
I'm trying to think. I'm trying to remember. Did he like do anything?
I mean, I think he won that award. It was like a it's
is that the popularity contest?
No, it's the what's it, the best football player award?
Oh,
okay. that award. Oh yeah, the Heisman. He would be 200 yards behind Cam Newton, so effectively a game. He is like 700 yards above Nick Marshall in 2014, another Auburn quarterback that, I don't know, went to a national championship that season. Pretty important.
And did that with a fantastic running back as well.
Yes. Looking at total touchdowns, a big stat there, he had 28 passing touchdowns and 14 rushing touchdowns. You know where that would put him all-time single season for Auburn? Second behind Cam Newton. With only 8 behind him, Cam Newton's 50, he would be 42nd. He'd be 11 up on Nick Marshall. That would also put him, just if he played last season at Auburn with those numbers, 11th all-time in his career numbers. Right, by one touchdown behind Jared Stidham, who started for 2 seasons. So that is pretty good offensive numbers. I think his more goal is to be looking at the record books. And to answer your offensive line question, I kind of invented a stat. Looking at the top 3 wide receivers for the Auburn Tigers, and Eric Singleton, Cam Coleman, and Malcolm Simmons, at least in receptions, they averaged about 13.3 average yards per reception. And I know that a lot of that is with especially Simmons and Singleton are a lot of like screens and stuff like that, but effectively, I have to look at the air yards, but they were going 13 yards down the field, then catching the football. Like, that's what Cam Coleman was. He was definitely he's going to catch the ball and then get tackled immediately, and did not have a lot of yards after catch. But effectively, imagine having to block for them to get down there, turn around, and then someone throw the ball. And looking at that, I think that's very much a play calling issue as well, with the maybe not as good O-line as pass blocking as it should have been.
We had conversations, sorry to cut you off. There were conversations early in the year that Hugh Freeze talked about how good the offensive line was at running the football, but how poor they were at throwing the football because of Jackson Arnold getting pressure immediately.
I mean, every 7 dropbacks, Jackson Arnold was being sacked.
And even if 3 of those were on Jackson Arnold, it's still still 4 of, I mean, that's...
I mean, Ashton Daniels, I think, probably has a similar number. Let me look up that one divided by... Ashton Daniels, 11. Every 11 drops back, he's being sacked. similar, you know, very, you'd want those numbers to be a lot higher for what this team could be. But, you know, I don't think that the quarterback room is the position of worry for Auburn this year.
No, not whatsoever. Offensive line, I think the biggest thing that they want to prove this year is can they compete in the SEC, right? I mean, that's going to be arguably the biggest talking point other than Byron Brown, just because so many of those guys making their way over from South Florida or transfers or incoming freshmen that are expected to have big-time roles. And so a question that you won't have the answer to until you get truly into SEC play. You'll be able to figure a little bit of that out against Baylor, but again, once you get into week three, week four, week five, you go on the road to take on Tennessee in week five, what your record looks like going into it, I think will tell a whole lot. So when you're looking at the receiver room, I think the biggest thing they want to prove is who's going to be the guy. Is it Keyshawn Singleton? You would imagine right now that's going to be the guy, but who's going to be number two? Who's going to be number three? Who's going to be the guys that, okay, corners pressing, safety blanket over top. Who's going to be the guy that can get 8-10 yards down the field and either run a comeback or just run some sort of zig and get open to where Byron Brown on third and four goes, okay, I know that if this progression doesn't work, you are my next guy to go to.
Yes. I mean, you look at, obviously, I think Keyshawn Singleton will be the number one receiver, but, and then I know that Deshaun Spencer has had a phenomenal spring and summer, and I would not be surprised if he is in these conversations for two. But no, looking at guys like Nimrod and Neptune, could they really step up and be Byron Brown's, you know, escape option, or can make defenders say, okay, yeah, we're going to have our best corner on Keyshawn Singleton, but where do we go from there, instead of having, okay, we have to play this guy this way, this guy this way, and based on what formation you're able to come out with and your personnel, give the defense a concern instead of, okay, we're just going to sit in cover three the entire game, but we'll have a man attached to Keyshawn Singleton's hip. Mm-hmm. They're not going to get a pass off. That's, I think, what we've seen sometimes with teams in the past. If they can have a multiple option where it's, well, we can't ignore, you know, Nimrod because he's going to go be wide open and catch a screen and go for 10 yards, or we can't leave someone in the tight end room open because he's not going to drop the ball this year. That's going to be a big step forward for this offense.
Yeah, the ability to not only find a 1,000-yard receiver, because, again, it's been quite some time since Auburn has had one of those, but more so just the, okay, who can be the guy this game? Who can be the guy next game? Make it to where you can find multiple different guys of, okay, holy cow, Keyshawn Singleton last game caught 7 passes for 120 yards. Then you look at this next game, and it was Bryce Kane that caught 6 passes for 90 yards as a leading receiver. Okay, look, it's week 3 against Florida. You know what? They're playing in. It's Jeremiah Koger that's able to go over the top and get guys and have 11 catches for 110 yards. Something like that, where it's, okay, rather than just the 2 catches for 80 yards and make it to where it's like that can be any given receiver, man, make it to where this receiver room can go out and prove as a whole that there's a whole lot that they can go out and they can prove. Look at defensive line. The biggest question mark that I think that they have and they want answered is, can the returners be the leaders for the young guys, right? You have a lot of the guys making their way back in the DJ Durkin front four, but when they need a breather, when they have to tap their helmet, can they be the leaders for that young guy or for that young gun? The linebacker room, we mentioned it. Who's going to be the guy standing next to Xavier Atkins that can make a big-time impact, right? Who's going to be the ones that can be relied on, that if Xavier Atkins is the mic and they know where he's at, because I guarantee every time they break the line or break the huddle, they're going to find number 17.
Oh, yeah.
But if Xavier Atkins is doubled or whatever the case may be, who can be the guy to make an open field tackle? Who can be the one that defenses have to go, okay, we know where Xavier Atkins is, but what about this guy over here? And you almost feel as if for this linebacker room, it's almost an expectation pressure. And I don't think that that's necessarily fair, but when you see greatness like you did from Xavier Atkins last year, you immediately tie that into this year and you expect that and beyond. And so a lot of that, yes, comes with him, comes with his overall talent, but I think you get room or you get help up front, you get help in the back. I think stuff like that definitely gets itself answered at least a little bit. And then the secondary. It's a very young, very talented group. You have a lot of new guys that are making their way, going to play serious snaps this year, whether that's from the transfer portal rankings or whether that's from high school. You do have some returners in there as well. But, again, a lot of new faces. Can you be the ones to mold into that DJ Durkin system? I think that there's plenty of guys that picked Auburn because of DJ Durkin, if not every single one of them. But the expectation of, man, these SEC receivers are so big, they're so fast, and they're so strong, and usually the cornerbacks are a little bit undersized. Can they be the ones to match the intensity, and you can trust them on an island, like you could with multiple other guys in years past?
Oh, yeah. I think with the linebacker, I want to hit on something that you said. It's just like, who's the second guy? I'd love to see kind of the coverage linebacker. I don't think we've seen at Auburn for some time. Like, yes, Xavier Atkins is great in run help, and he's fast. He's a good QB spy. But what about a guy that can, if you trust him, like, I think for the Detroit Lions, is kind of how I look at it, is like a Jack Campbell or an Alex Anzalone, of a guy that if we put him in coverage, he's going to shut down a linebacker. Yeah. If someone comes into his space on a slant or a slot receiver, he's able to keep with them until safety help gets there and be able to cut off the middle of the field passing lane that I think has been so wide open for opponents. I mean, look back at 2023 with Brock Bowers, or Yeah, 2023 with Brock Bowers effectively winning a game, basically just running inside routes of, I'm going to cut over the middle of the field, stop me. If they could find a linebacker that can drop and do that, and I think they have the guys that can do it, talent-wise, it's just the mental instincts and the leadership of having a true Mike linebacker, while a guy like Xavier Atkins and some of these other, just like DeMarcus Riddick, just these athletes that can just attack the passer and attack the run game and let the defensive line go to work and be effectively an extra safety or an extra cornerback there and lock up the middle passing lanes and the seams that really have given Auburn fits in the past couple years.
Yeah, get it to where it feels like you're playing college football.
The user.
After the microtransactions are taken away. But, yes, like you're the user that goes and sits 15 yards down the field or sits right at the line of scrimmage and doesn't let that underneath routes be a part of it. Or you can take up the post. You can do whatever you need to do. Have somebody like that in the Auburn back or in the Auburn linebacker room. Before we take a break, we still have another minute or two. Do you have a single group that has the most to prove, not improve, but just the most to prove for 2026 with this Alex Golish squad?
I'm going to go with the offensive line. I'm sure every Auburn fan would agree with me that this has been the position that Auburn has just not figured out. All the way back from the Gus Malzahn era, where it was Gus only brings in three-star offensive linemen and doesn't develop them, to just kind of the ups and downs of the, yeah, they'll have a Connor Liu every so often. That's fantastic, but there's not five of them. And there's not guys that you're going to see in the top of the draft like every other team in the Southeastern Conference has, it seems like. And that's something that's got to change. And the offensive line has got to have a chip on their shoulder, not only from a this season standpoint of protecting the passer, don't be the most sacked SEC team, from running the football and allowing this offense to force their will on opponents, but also from a multi-year perspective of developing guys, getting a lot of young guys. You look at what this recruiting is doing right now. If they can continue that and build something, those commitments are going to go from four-star offensive lineman to five-star offensive lineman. If it's a proven, I'm going to go to Auburn, I'm going to sit for a year and develop, and then I'm going to play, and that's a path to the NFL, that's going to help out with recruiting. So being a pipeline and developing offensive linemen would be just something that has not been seen at Auburn in a long time. And they've got young guys do it. Cale Ellis is a guy that jumps out to me as kind of a young guy that can 100% hold his own. Cole Best, another. If they can get more of those guys, especially at the tackle positions, Auburn's ceiling rises dramatically. So does their floor. And they can go from a team that, if nothing really goes as they would like it to, but it's holds average, from a 5-win team to a 7-win team.
I wish I could disagree. I'll do it for radio purposes. Give me the receiver group. I think that was
my number two.
I kind of want to go the secondary defensively, yet that being said, because the defense has been so solid, until there's a reason for me to sit there and say, yep, this group needs to prove a whole lot. Just kind of looking at the defense as a whole, I won't put them in that conversation. But I think the receiver room, I think it's one. If it's not the offensive line, I think the receivers are right in there because, again, you have the Keyshawn Singleton, who you expect to be the number one, the go-to guy, just because of the camaraderie with Byron Brown and the proven success together. Yet, even in terms of what Keyshawn Singleton did this past year, we talk about what Byron Brown did. If he can compete in the SEC, what about Keyshawn Singleton? Can he put up similar numbers? If not, can you find, again, that second, that third, that fourth? Sometimes you need a fifth or a sixth guy to really step up and take the group and carry them game by game if needed, again, to be that secondary guy, to be that third guy that Byron Brown can go to, because we've had a lot of these conversations of the past of, would you rather have the receiver room where every single person in America knows their name, or would you rather have a group of guys that don't necessarily get the individual highlights yet? Okay, holy cow, Byron Brown threw for 280 yards, and you're looking up, and this guy caught six passes. This guy caught five passes. This guy caught seven passes for 45 yards, and there's just a giant group of, okay, we can't double-team this guy, and we'll let this guy go one-on-one. Have so many different answers that you can go to if you're this Auburn offense. I think the receiver room is one that you hope has a whole lot to prove making their way up into the SEC level.
Oh, no, I think that was definitely my number two, especially with the unknowns at talent there. They can be an absolute just stud group and take pressure off of everybody else, because if you're not dropping the football or running bad routes, and with the play calling that is expected to be an improvement, that's going to take off pressure for Byron Brown then, because he knows who he's throwing to. That takes off pressure for the run game, because you can't just load the box against Auburn anymore. You got to play nickel. You got to play some dime. You've got to play the corners and the ends of the field, which allows runs up the middle to go for big yards. And it takes pressure off the offensive line of, if he can get open early and Byron Brown can get it out faster, I don't have to guard a first-round defensive end, which it seems like every SEC team has. I don't have to block him for as much. He's not going to be able to do anything if the ball is getting out quickly and efficiently.
It sounds really simple, stupid to say, but if the offensive line is better, the quarterback is better. If the running back room is better, the offensive line is better. If the receivers are better, the quarterback is better. If the receivers are better, it makes the running back room better.
And just let everything be better.
Just be better. Be better, score more points, don't allow as many points, and win games. We cracked the code. Who thought? Friday, July 10th. Bookmark it, put it on a t-shirt. We're going to take a break and do so, and who knows? We might have just invented everything. We might be back for hour number two. We might not. I guess we'll find out. But we'll be back to wrap up hour number one right after this.
You are on the line with Kristen Griffin and Trip Upton on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and on the Radio Alabama app.
Wrapping up hour number one here on ESPN 106.7. Appreciate everybody for being here with us, and only have just a few moments before the music starts playing us and we get underway. Or I guess we take our break and then come back with hour number two. But a really fun hour number one. We continue that in hour number two. We're talking about people underrating Auburn's running back room. Not a top 10 unit in the country. We'll talk about that. And also, the ESPN FPI rankings. As much as we love and endear and hold true to preseason rankings, ESPN FPI is kind of liking the Tigers, and they have them inside the top 25. So it should be really, really fun here in hour number two.
Yeah, I mean, the FPI has been scrutinized in years past because of the SEC bias. We'll explore that and talk a little bit about that in hour number two.
Boom. Hope you'll stay with us when we come back. More football conversations here, Free for All Friday at its finest. You can be a part of it. 334-321-1390. Hour number two coming up.
An Auburn Network production. You are on the line on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be a part of the show, call 334-321-1390 or text in at 334-784-1067. The boys are bringing you all the action on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. When it comes to the Tigers, the SEC, and the hottest topics in sports, this is where you want to be.
As much as we hate preseason rankings, this one is in favor of Auburn, so it's obviously going to be the correct one that we like.
Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, straight from the ESPN 106.7 studio, here's Kristen Griffin and Trip Upton.
Hour number one in the books. We welcome you into hour number two here on the Friday edition of On the Line. And 1 hour down means we're 1 hour closer to getting the weekend started. He's Trip Upton. I'm Christian Griffin. Appreciate everybody for being here with us, whether you're just now tuned in, whether you tuned in a little bit through hour number one, or if you've been with us the entire time. We greatly appreciate you spending a little time here on this Friday afternoon here with us on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. In hour number one, had a fun discussion that, stop me if you've heard this said before, wasn't necessarily the route we were planning on taking, but ended up being a really fun conversation for the first 30 minutes to where this conversation took the entire hour, but did so being able to talk football and talking season. And so those two things kind of work hand in hand with one another. Kind of looked at Auburn position groups throughout history, throughout the entirety of Auburn sports, and which ones have been a little lackluster, which ones have been great, which ones have been average, which ones you feel like fluctuate every single year. And then kind of correlated that to the 2026 season and what the, not the improvements, but what wants to be proved by each position group for this Alex Golish team in 2026, and talked about the biggest ones and then which one we think has the most to prove in 2026. Tripp said, nope, you know what? I'm not going to tell you. Go back and listen.
Yeah.
Wherever you get your podcasts, or go to our radio. Or, wow, that really threw me off. If you missed any of hour number one, you can always go back and check it out at our podcast center at ESPNAU.com, and there you will find who we said was the most important position group in terms of what they have to prove.
Yeah, I mean, and if you are tapped in with Auburn or our show at all, you could probably guess them and what we said, but I'm not going to tell you that. But you know what?
Tripp said the kicker, and go figure out why.
Yep, exactly. But no, look, in hour number two, we're going to look at the latest CBS Sports article looking at the running back groups in college football, and a name that is notoriously missing from this group, in our opinion, is the Auburn Tigers. We'll break that down, react to that list, and kind of see what, if CBS knows what they're talking about in terms of the running back room, or if they need to maybe watch a little bit more tape of the Auburn Tigers. But first, we'll talk a little bit about the FPI, everyone's favorite preseason ranking index, and look and where they have the Auburn Tigers, which is actually pretty high for what everyone else expects here at Auburn and what everyone has been saying about Auburn as well as in years past. We will jump in and take a look at that and see what the numbers say for Auburn. But if you want to be a part of the show, phone lines are completely open. It's a free-for-all Friday. We wouldn't have it any other way. Call us 334-321-1390. The text box is always open as well. Send something in there, anything, questions, comments, hopefully no concerns unless it's about agreeing with us, but you can go ahead and text in there at 334-784-1685, 334-784-1OTL.
And we do. We discuss ESPN. As much as we dislike preseason rankings, as much as we despise them, and as much you know what as we talk about how pointless they really are, it's one of those, yeah, when everybody else does it, it's fine, but if I do it, it's cool. It's kind of how we're taking the route today. We can just contradict our own contradictions.
We are just reacting to the numbers they are giving us. And
just happening to get a little bit more excited about this one than the other ones because we found the one that's actually right.
Sure. I mean, it may, even though I'd say that a majority of college fans also say this one is the one that's like, okay, really, for one big glaring reason, and that is their love of the Southeastern Conference, and I can't necessarily disagree with that, but we will jump right into it and look at it and give you our thoughts because, you know, as the stalwarts of the Auburn media world, we have to talk about anything and everything that comes to Auburn athletics, specifically Auburn football, and that is what we're going to do looking at this ESPN FPI.
How many teams are there from the – if you're talking about the ESPN, or the SEC ESPN love, here we go. We'll count out loud. 1, 2, 3.
Texas.
4.
Georgia. Alabama. LSU.
That's not counting.
Oh, well, I'm giving them context of who the teams that are ranked above Auburn.
Oh, that was going backwards. Well, we are going to hit that. I'm just
– Okay, sorry. Go ahead. Sorry.
3, 4, 5. 8, 9, 10, 11. Do you have 11 too? I don't know. Just read every name and tell me how many it is.
All right. The teams above Auburn. Texas. That's one.
Man, just taking away the entire segment with your list right here. All right. Well, what you got?
I'm kidding. 1, 2, 3, 4.
On air live.
Five,
give me
six,
a historical
seven.
Fact.
A historical fact live on air.
Yep.
Australia back in the 1900s fought a war against emus and lost. They were trying to curb the emu population in certain areas, and they built these massive fences that they have out there, and they lost the war. The emu population grew during their conflict.
Those that weren't with us yesterday, they have
I almost posted something of, like, on the line today with no context. We have it, like, Morgan State and, like, all, like, the random historical facts we talked about.
That'd be awesome. No context OTL, and it just has random graphics that you have to go back and listen.
Yeah. I mean, that would be, yeah. But anyway, so they, let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 in the top. So,
oh, you have 12? I have 11.
12 including the team below Auburn that's an SEC team. I was saying in the top 25. Auburn is the 11th ranked in.
Sure.
Yes.
Well, easy enough. How about we dive into it?
Yeah, let's look at it.
We will not spend much time talking on 25 or 24. Because I just don't necessarily care, other than Rhett Lashley is the one connection that I'll have there.
Is Hank Brown still at Iowa?
I think he's there.
Is he?
I don't think he's expected to be the starter, though.
Yeah, it's him, Ryan Fitzgerald, Jeremy Helinski. It's probably going to be Jeremy Helinski.
Helinski, yeah, 100%. Yeah, Iowa sits at number 25. SMU comes in at number 24. And then the first SEC team is there with South Carolina, the Gamecocks, who you feel like every single year are in this same, very similar position as years past. I think, obviously, Lenora Sellers helps that. I think big guys like Dylan Stewart obviously help that. But so many question marks surrounding this South Carolina program, and really excited to see what Shane Beamer has to say here coming up in a couple of days or next week or I guess officially a week and a half or whatever, but because, again, he's walking in kind of on the hot seat. There were conversations of if he was going to follow his dad in the footsteps and take that Virginia Tech job, obviously decided not to, and he's one of the best players coaches in terms of everybody that's there absolutely loves him.
Yeah.
It's just the fact of how long until South Carolina gets frustrated with the lack of big-time wins that they're able to get.
I think, honestly, he could have a career similar to Mark Stoops in the idea of, like, if South Carolina looks in the mirror, and I know that's hard with Clemson on the other side of the state, that's won national championships in the last decade, but if they go, hey, we're not Alabama. Like, what Kentucky's
the mindset
done,
of, like, it's not, we're not getting better than this?
If we can get to 7-5 every year, cool. Like, that is good enough. They haven't gotten there either, so let's, you know, that's kind of putting the cart before the horse.
Has NIL changed that, in your opinion, at all?
With
just,
like,
the overall expectations of, like, certain programs, and not calling out South Carolina, because I think that South Carolina has the opportunity to be an 8-9 win football team just based off of what they do with recruiting and how Beamer's able to get guys like that. But does NIL change the head coaching pressure, even at programs that are not expected to make that giant jump?
I think now that the fan base is involved with their pocketbooks so much more and legally, that it is added pressure, because for South Carolina, we've seen this at Auburn just the same, of why should we need to win if we're going to be spending money. If I'm a booster at Auburn and I'm spending $100,000 to go towards our NIL collective or however much money, I expect to see results. Instead of, I understand that I cannot control this. This is a year-by-year university thing. And yes, I can go to the booster club. And yes, I can go to the games. But now that I can directly pay and help improve our roster, that is something that has caused a lot more pressure, I think, from the booster side of things across the country.
I don't disagree with that. I think the ROI is much higher than – obviously, it's higher just based off of the amount that every school continues to ask for.
Yeah, I mean, not to cut you off, but like looking at Texas Tech, they before the NIL era, they were a team that always had the potential to make a jump but were never really a contender.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they had to go through Texas and Oklahoma when they were there, but even people were still higher on Oklahoma State. People were still higher on teams like Kansas State. People were higher in the new teams that came into the Big 12, like Colorado, Utah, and the Arizona schools. Texas Tech is one of the two ranked Big 12 teams above Auburn. And the only other one is a BYU team that does it, quote-unquote, the right way. And they're only two steps ahead of Auburn.
South Carolina sits as the 23rd ranked team, according to ESPN's preseason college football top 25. And then you go right below South Carolina, and there is the Auburn Tigers sitting at 22. And I know you are a big numbers guy when it comes to just college football. Talk to the people that may not understand, just before we dive into this too much, what the FPI really means, because it's not the overall rankings. This is not what Auburn is expected to have next to their name to get the season started, yet there's a lot of other things that factor into this.
So the Football Power Index, this is from the ESPN website, measures the team's true strength based on a net point scale. Like, the good teams, like Ohio State is who is the number one team, are positive at 28.7. The worst team in the country, UL Monroe, go Warhawks, -19.3. So it is based on that, and looking at teams and comparing teams, expected point margin versus opponents on a neutral field. So if a team is higher in the FPI, they would be favored by X amount of points on a neutral field. That's kind of the – and that is based a lot on the strength of schedule. That is why the SEC is high up, because
strength of schedule, and then if you matched all of these people up on like a neutral site, their expectations of like points that they score versus points they give up.
Yes, effectively. So looking at the Auburn Tigers, their FPI is 12. Again, that is a little bit lower than the team above them, 0.3 higher than South Carolina. Because of that, their projected win-loss record is about 6.6 wins and 5.4 losses based on the teams they play on a neutral field. This takes away environment. So the environment of Jordan-Hare Stadium does not play a factor on this. The away environments they play in also do not play an impact on this. That they have them going about anywhere between 7-5 and 6-6. Again,
crazy why Auburn's win total is projected 6.5, right? I can't imagine how that works.
Right. And now you might be wondering, Tripp, I have a really important question, is because a 6-6 team and a 7-5 team is not a top 25 ranked team. And you would be very valid in saying that. That's where the strength of schedule comes in. When you look at two spots lower than Auburn and the SMU Mustangs, their projected record is 8-4. So you're really looking at it confused, saying, hey, wait. How does Auburn above SMU? It's because Auburn's 7-5 is better than SMU's 8-4.
And correct me if I'm wrong, this also plays a little bit of a factor into just your offensive and your defensive efficiency, as well as just the teams in college football, right? I know that your schedule has the most to play a factor into it, but it's also, okay, you put Auburn against every single team in college football on a neutral site field. I believe those are numbers that go into it as well, right?
Yes, that is correct. So that's why they think Auburn, because of the teams they're playing, because of what their schedule looks like, and because of that, they would be ranked over an SMU team, even though SMU is a 91% chance, according to FPI, to make a bowl game. Auburn's is a hair under 70%. It's because that, again, not all records are created equal. Because if you gave Auburn's SMU schedule and SMU's Auburn schedule, I guarantee you those teams would be very vastly different.
Somebody needs to make, and I'm so surprised they don't, and honestly, there may already be that I just don't know of, but this is a question for Mr. Jack Hudden. And I may send him a text if he's not listening. Jack, if you're listening, text me. If not, I'll text you over the break. Need him to run his HUD rankings and come up with a website for the perfect talking points of conversating of put Auburn in SMU's schedule and see what they do. Put set SMU and Auburn schedule and see what they do. I mean, just so that way it's not Auburn would beat this team and this team. SMU's not beating Baylor or Florida or anything. There's actual like numbers that go into it to see what the difference in win projections and the difference in strength of schedule. I'm sure there's something.
There's probably I know that the CFP Graphs website that we looked at last week has a comparison function where I can go, okay, here's Auburn, here's SMU, here's are their advanced metrics from last season or going into this season.
But that's not comparing like a it's not putting Auburn with Notre Dame's schedule or putting Auburn in Oregon's schedule be able to compare. But that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
But how nice would that be to actually – if anybody knows a website like
text
this,
it in,
please
call it, let us know.
Please send that to me, 334-784-1685, because I'll use it all the time, because then you can actually sit there and speak numbers of like, okay, look – because of this, Auburn is now, let's put Auburn at Notre Dame's schedule. Let's put Notre Dame at Auburn's schedule.
Brandon.
And funny enough, Auburn goes from a 6.5 win margin to a 7.7, or again, whatever the case may be.
Sure.
But it's like, then you go into the numbers of, okay, yeah, this team is now projected to win this many games based off of these.
There's got to be something out there. If you know it, send it, because you will
literally
be
talking.
You will be making
websites.
my weekend plans if you send me that. Like that's just what I'm going to do this weekend. Just shut myself in my room and just stare at numbers all day. But no, looking at some other projections that this would give, if this would hold true, Auburn a 12% chance to make the playoffs, to just make it, not win a game, just to be the last team in and make the playoffs.
12%?
Better than the 0% that they've had every other year.
It's all we've asked for is when late October, when November gets here, be delusional enough to think you still have a chance. To sit there and go, now look, here's this Auburn team that quote-unquote still controls its own destiny, and although they may have a loss in there, you don't look at a bad loss, and this is a team that we need to be on lookout for. That's all we really ask for. Oh, it's all we need to be delusional enough for. And whether that's year one this year or just building that foundation, because I know that obviously 7 wins doesn't put you in that look out for Auburn category, but I also hope that Auburn's not 7-2 when you get to that point. And then it's, okay, look out for Auburn, and then you finish 7-5. But
right.
So many different ways to go about that. But again, I'm now stuck on trying to find that website because I need to find something similar.
Let's just make our own.
Gosh,
the line matrix.
Somebody's missing out on a lot of money if they're able to come up with something like that can put true proven analytics into where it's just a drag and drop. Put Auburn in Michigan's schedule
and see what the record looks like. Numbers comparatively.
Yeah,
this
roster wears maize and blue or whatever the case may be, and man.
There's a
way. It's like playing 162-0 or like playing 82-0. Like, all right, how high can Auburn's record or how high can Auburn pick against certain teams to still finish 15-0 or whatever the case may be? It's like, okay, Auburn had to play the 88th team in strength of schedule to go undefeated. Like, that would be so fun.
I mean, I'm sure that we could just look at the FPI and the SP Plus and go, okay, how many teams are Auburn higher than on –
sure.
Schedule. How many are they lower than? Granted, we would have to find a acceptable number range to account for home field advantage, because maybe it's like these. If you're on the road, you get subtracted this many points, or if you're at home, you get added this many points, and make it even. If we could do that, that would be some money. And myself and other nerds about college football would 100% spend some time.
There would 100% be people that spent a lot of time on that. What I do know is we need to get to our first break here in hour number two. We'll continue breaking down the college football preseason top 25 FPI as Auburn sits at number 22. We'll talk about the teams that are lower than them, I guess lower in number, higher in ranking, and who they play coming up here when we come back, as we're off and running in hour number two here on the Free For All Friday edition of On the Line.
You're on the line with Kristen Griffin and Trip Upton. If you want to be a part of the show, call 334-321-1390 or text us at 334-784-1067.
All All right, we're back here on the Friday edition of On the Line. He is Trip Upton. I'm Christian Griffin. Appreciate everybody for being here with us. And we're hitting the ESPN FPI preseason top 25. That's, it feels like it's a whole lot of words, but Auburn, as much as we love sarcastically preseason rankings, Auburn does come in the top 25 just with the FPI. And again, this is not what ESPN has Auburn projected to be to start the season. I would be very surprised if there was a ranking next to Auburn's name to get the season underway against Baylor. But according to neutral sites and according to Auburn's strength of schedule and their players and everything like that, Auburn comes in as the number 22 team in FPI. Right above them is the Missouri Tigers, who Auburn will not play this season. I think Eli Drinkwitz is at a very interesting spot because of the expectations that have been met and have been kind of exceeded, but not necessarily expected to do all of that. This year you have Ahmad Hardy, but outside of that, I don't know that you could tell me a whole lot about this Missouri team
Austin Simmons, who is
the quarterback. I said that, then I realized, yeah, Austin Simmons making his way, the lefty that was at Ole Miss. And I know they brought a couple other receivers, but I could not tell you what is expected from this Missouri defense or really the question marks that are revolving around the offensive line. But Missouri comes in at number 22 or 21, apologies. Won't spend too much time on 20 or 19, but BYU and Clemson are right there. Florida is the 18th ranked team in FPI. So, again, Auburn and Florida in just about everything other than Was it like expected power rankings over the next 2 or 3 years? Is that where Florida was a lot higher than Auburn?
Yes.
Where Auburn was like the 41st team and Florida was like the 18th. But other than that, you look just about everywhere else and every single other number. And Auburn and Florida are pretty similar, which is fun because they play inside Jordan-Hare Stadium with first-year head coaches and know that that's going to be a whole lot of fun. Penn State comes in at 17. Tennessee comes in at the 16th ranked team in the FPI. I almost said Missouri again, but that's their total side note and halfway unprofessional on this Friday. But are you a fan of alternate logos?
Yes.
Because I ask because I'm looking at this college football ranking system and FPI, and I see the block M that I know is Michigan,
but
yet
Missouri
uses it for basketball. Same thing with, like, the A's for Arkansas is different for baseball. You have the Texas T that looks like Tennessee on their hat.
I like that. I mean, I understand why I understand why someone wouldn't for, like, Tennessee and Texas both using the big T.
Yeah.
I get that, but in that same sport, Tennessee uses a UT. Like, it's different. And I think I would love Auburn to run one of those alternate logos. I know we have like the
block A.
The block A or like the block AU instead of the what we have now. I mean, I love our logo now or Auburn's logo now, don't get me wrong. But I wish, you know, I don't have a single article of clothing with just the AU except like a belt. It's all the eagle or the tiger or the state of Alabama with the power stripe down the middle. That's kind of the merchandise that I wear at least, but no, I'm a big fan of alternate logos. I see what you mean on the M. I don't. It's kind of weird looking at Texas Tech's logo where it's they changed the logo to an alternate.
They got rid of the black outline.
The bevel, yeah.
Is that what it's called?
It's called a bevel. Yes. Someone doesn't follow the Sickos committee on social media. It's just for nerds. It's awesome. It's really good.
So you can call it the bevel. I'll continue to call it the outline, and we'll go from there.
Sure. I mean, hey, you know what? not the first time Texas Tech's been concerned with red or black. So
that was pretty solid.
Thank you. I'm here all week. Here all week.
Nicely done. You're the blackjack of all trades.
Oh, thank you. You know.
Oh, man. Music kicking us out. We'll continue talking this before we get into Auburn's running back room when we come back.
halfway through hour number two. You're on the line with Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7.
I would like to make a big-time apology to all of the Bevels out there.
We have educated him. Don't worry, Trey.
Yeah, apparently I'm the only person in the country, in the freaking world, that doesn't know what a bevel. By God, I know what a dang bevel is now. I didn't, but I do in fact now know that bevels are basically what makes things look 3D.
Yes, sir.
And so that will be the best way for me to go about it, and that's all that I will truly know about on that side of things. But never thought that my bevel knowledge would get in the way of our ESPN FBI college football rankings, but here we are.
It's fine.
Yeah, here we are. And so we will continue that, but it looks like we have a phone call we're going to get to.
Yes, we are going to be joined by James, my friend. How are you doing?
I'm doing good, man. Thanks for taking my call. I just want to ask a quick question for clarification.
James, do you care if I ask a question first?
Go ahead.
Do you know what a bevel is?
A bevel?
Yes, sir.
Yes.
Dang it. Okay, that was all. Never mind.
Yeah.
Okay. I was hoping there'd be somebody else.
Anyway, the new rule, 5 for 5.
Yes, sir.
It comes into play when? When is it going to affect?
So I believe with this fall class, as well as the upcoming, like with the recruits that just committed and are stepping onto campus and will be true freshmen in 2026, I believe, if assuming it is continued to be passed, which it seems like it will be, it will start with this class. And what they will do is, as far as my understanding of it, certain players will be grandfathered in terms of looking at what's best for their eligibility. If you've played for 3 years and you're going in your fourth year and you don't have you haven't used a red shirt, you will get the 5 for 5. You will get an extra year of eligibility tacked on for that while they're in this transition period. If you've already used a red shirt year and so you are a red shirt senior this year, you will not get another year of eligibility, and they will look at it case by case and determine what makes sense for each athlete and what is in the athlete's best interest.
Okay, here's the reason I ask. Jeremiah Cobb, this is going to be his fourth year. He played his first 3 years. Will he be eligible to remain and play a fifth year in 2027?
So he's a true junior. So he did not redshirt because he was in the 2023 graduating class. Yes,
correct.
I think that means that he would get an extra year effectively. He would have a senior year next year, it would be senior year this year, and then he'd have his fifth year on next year. Again, it is determined on what the best for that player is. And I would believe Jeremiah Cobb, if he chooses to, could come back. Now, would I be surprised if what we expect from this Auburn offense this year, that Jeremiah Cobb goes to the NFL? It wouldn't shock me from what he could do if they want to run the ball with him as the feature back, but he would also have the ability to come back for a fifth senior year.
Right. I guess the reason I'm asking that, you've got Jeremiah Cobb. If he comes back, let's just use the example he does. You got Mison Johnson-Cook coming in.
Mm-hmm.
You got the other kid from Memphis coming in. You got Omar Mapps still will be here. I'm not sure about Bryson Washington or Nakai Davenport.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Auburn's backfield room is going to be stacked.
Yeah,
as far as talent, but as we all know, I mean, who's going to want to hang around? And get limited carries.
Right. There's only enough carries to go around.
No. And let me tell you, somebody that the people think is going to be great, I don't see him playing as Alvin Henderson.
No, I'm 100% with you. I hate to say that, too, because I'm so high on him. Setting records in high school. Granted, you look at it as a small school in Elba, but those are numbers you can't fake, no matter what division of football you're at, especially running the football. Yeah, I would not be surprised with the rule changes if he looks to the portal. I hate that, but I think if they're wanting to keep Omar Mabson, if they're wanting to keep Davenport and Washington, who are both underclassmen, I believe, or would get an extra year, none of them are redshirt seniors. And if Cobb is to stay, then yeah, that would be an interesting conversation.
So from now on, let's just talk about Mison Johnson-Cook. So with this new rule, when he steps on campus,
He'll get five years.
Correct. Yes, sir. So essentially, the redshirting is gone. There are no longer going to be freshmen who walk on campus and get their redshirt year, so that way they can come back and play their redshirt freshman year. It is 5 years to play 5 years, and I think that's why Auburn has been so advantageous in the transfer portal, or in the recruiting class, rather, because not only with the 5 for 5, but if the one transfer portal rule works its way back into effect, I think it makes it a whole lot better for those 5 for 5 first-year guys, because it makes the argument that much easier that they don't want to transfer out.
Exactly. Okay, guys, as always, enjoy your show. Thanks for your time.
Yes, sir. Appreciate
yes, sir.
You
Thank
for
you.
For calling in and being a big part of it throughout the summer. Yes, sir.
Yeah, I had a question, but I'm very curious on the idea that the like that just came to my mind of with the redshirting going away, you're not going to have those awkward conversations at the end of the year where it's like, hey, we've played this guy in 3 games.
Yeah, do we play a fourth?
What we saw with Ashton Daniels last year where he's only played three games and we got 2 games left and bowl game doesn't count if we make it there, but what do we do for Mercer? And you saw Deuce Knight get a start there because of that very conversation.
Mm-hmm.
You won't have that anymore. So if your best option is a true freshman, and you don't have to be like, man, we hope we can redshirt him, the year is going to run out anyway. I think across the board, you will see more opportunities where guys are going to – they're going to play guys earlier and earlier because of this 5 for 5.
Yeah.
Because the idea of we don't have to wait for a redshirt. If our quarterbacks aren't good, we don't have to wait till the end of the year to play the freshman because we want him to not lose this year of eligibility. Play the kid. The year of eligibility is going anyway.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to see that across the board at every position, honestly.
It eliminates the conflict for both parties of, okay, you don't have to have the recruiting conversations of you can come in and play early. If not, you can come in and sit for a year behind everybody because everybody's going to know either I'm going to play early or I'm going to waste a year of eligibility, which means, I mean, maybe the lower levels are going to be able to get a little bit more talent back because the guys that want to just come to Auburn and learn for a year but still have their red shirts, well, that's not going to be the case anymore. You'll still see guys take that mentality, but it'll be few and far between because of the idea of playing time. But again, if that one transfer portal works its way into effect as well, then you just continue to make things a little bit easier for the coaching staff and for the universities. And by no means am I going to say it make it more difficult on the players, but you get past the Hayes-Fawcett graphics where you're sitting there looking at the rainbow logos all across
the T.J. Finley special.
Yes, of, okay, he played here, then went 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 here. Then there's an – why is there an NFL logo? Oh, okay, now we went back to college. Like, you're gonna eliminate a lot of that, which I don't see as a negative thing whatsoever.
I would love for someone to sell a – you know how, like, we talk about, like, the Kelsey jerseys? That for T.J. Finley, and it's just like a two-inch stripe for every stop
or
he's at.
Not even a stripe, but it's a certain part of every
like,
single.
It's like the number one is from his Auburn days.
Correct.
The 10 is from the Incarnate Word or something. Yeah, his practice cuff of copy at Incarnate Word.
Yep. It's LSU colors.
Sure. The LSU shoulder stripes.
There's the Tulane Green Wave. Like, it's just everything.
That would be. I'd buy it.
It's got the Georgia State. Something.
Sure. It has like the lettering at the at the top of your chest. That'd be hilarious. But no, I'm very curious of what those decisions would look like with like a man. You know, our running back room has been devastated with injuries, but we don't want to burn the red shirt if we don't have to. It's okay. You know, if something happens to our number one and number two, we can play whoever we want to. Or if hey, if you're you might be the best wide receiver, one of the best five wide receivers on the team, but we don't want to use you this year because we have a lot of seniors. It's not going to matter. Play the kid. That is going to be a conversation in every single position room across the entire country.
We'll put a pause on the FPI rankings for now because it's a perfect segue talking about Jeremiah Cobb, talking about Nakai Davenport, talking about Bryson Washington into CBS's article about the top 10 running back rooms in the country. And now if you went and you asked a lot of people, you would say that this Auburn team is probably somewhere on there.
They I'd say not. So.
The Auburn Tigers, at least according to CBS Sports, is not listed as a top 10 running back room in the country. And I haven't looked at this. This is the first time I wanted to save the raw reactions for live on the show. And we won't be able to talk too much about it before we got to take our final break and get out of here for the weekend. But looking just at number 10, you feel like it makes it to where I don't know how much I trust this because it's the Georgia Bulldogs.
Right, which I've had conversations with many of my Georgia fan friends of the idea that the Bulldogs do not have the signature run game they've always had. They've always had a Todd Gurley. They've always had a Nick Chubb and Sony Michel. They've always had a Herschel Walker type guy. And even in modern era, when they took like a step back, like DeAndre Swift was really solid.
Yeah,
Kendall Milton, a decent running back here and there. James Cook was really good. I'm not going to sit here and say Nate Frazier is a guy that really scares me if I'm an opposing defense like Jeremiah Cobb can. Frazier is good. I mean, it says on here is he's averaging 5.5 yards a carry and he's explosive. However, you don't really sit there and say like some other guys of, we need a game plan for Georgia's running game. We need a game plan for Nate Frazier. You don't really see that. They do have some young guys that can be good. Chauncey Bowens, pretty decent. Dwight Phillips and Dante Dowdle, I've heard he's been, from my Georgia people, Dante Dowdle is the guy to know.
The Kentucky running back, yeah.
Yes, and they have a freshman my friend sent me. I would have to go look at our unnamed social media app DMs that he sent me before. But and it also says Gunnar Stockton listed on there. You're getting a better quarterback with Byron Brown, who's probably the better runner. He would be the RB1 for Georgia, let alone at quarterback.
Yeah. So Georgia there at number 10. Number 9 is Ohio State's Bo Jackson.
That
funny
seems
enough,
low.
A fantastic running back name. I can't really think of why, but Bo Jackson just happens to flow off the tongue nicely for the Ohio State announcers. But you also had Zay West and Jacoby Jackson in there for Ohio State. You have Texas. I'm surprised they're number 8, to be completely honest with you. Raelique Brown, Hollywood Smothers. I think that's a pretty solid 1-2 punch. You also have Derek Cooper, Michael Terry in there from the younger rankings. I'm surprised Texas is as low as they are.
Yeah, I mean, I think that Texas could be a top 5 unit, even top 3. I think it is only because of the idea that the depth isn't there. They have two aces, but the rest of the hand is a bunch of 3s and 4s. To make a poker analogy, they probably need to I think that's why they're so low, but we'll have to see who else is on this list. Missouri, right above them. If Ahmad Hardy is not healthy, they're not on this list.
That's exactly right. It's a running back room, not top 10 running backs, because Ahmad Hardy is obviously in that. But it mentions they have Jamal Roberts, who averaged 6 yards a carry. But
that's literally based on the idea of, oh, thank goodness we don't have to face Ahmad Hardy. They're probably passing. And, oh, actually, they're running.
Missouri is number 7.
That's a good
even just from – would you take – Ahmad Hardy and Jamal Roberts, or would you take Raelique Brown and Hollywood Smothers? Because I know my answer.
I would take Ahmad Hardy over both of those guys. And even maybe,
But together,
I don't know. I think I might take Texas.
I think I'm going Hookem on that.
I think I am. I love Ahmad Hardy. I think he's fantastic. I mean, when he came to Jordan-Hare Stadium, he didn't have a great game when he was with ULM back in the day.
Didn't have an incredible
game with Missouri,
game with
either.
Missouri either.
Right, and that speaks to DJ Durkin's run defense. However, I also think that the talent of Ahmad Hardy, I think, is better. But if you're asking me to pick, because Ahmad Hardy can't run every play, his health is in question because he was, shot. That's a concern there in terms of ranking this team. It's a risk you're willing to take because his talent is so good. But don't sell me on Jamal Roberts. I don't think he's better than either of the Texas running backs.
Number 6, moving kind of quickly, is Florida. Jaden Baugh, again,
good,
fantastic.
What's the depth like?
Who's after that?
I mean,
My thing is, I'm perfectly fine if you put the number one of number ones for these teams over Jeremiah Cobb. I would still be willing to have a conversation of why you need to place some of these names over Jeremiah Cobb. Yet, if you are, like what you mentioned, if you are listing Georgia at number 10 and you also throw Gunnar Stockton in that room, essentially from a running perspective, then I don't want to hear that when you're mentioning Byron Brown. If you're mentioning just one name like Jaden Baugh, when you could give me Jeremiah Cobb and you don't even need a name. It's Jaden Baugh. There's Jeremiah Cobb and there might even be Jeremiah Cobb blank and blank.
Keep in mind, by the way, not going to tell you what the teams are, but the only team that has a quarterback mentioned is Georgia, by the way. If that tells you anything of the idea of we just got to have a logo on there, we got to have Georgia's logo because they're RBU, which they have a great claim to do that. I'm not going to sit there and tell you that they don't, but ain't no way that you're going to list him over other mobile quarterbacks like, I don't know, Arch Manning, the front runner for one of the Heisman trophies. Ain't no way you're going to have him over a guy like Darian Mensah who can move around a little bit. Like, meanwhile, Byron Brown would outrush every single one of their like RBs 2 through 5.
Yeah. USC at number 5.
No, that one's ridiculous as well.
I'm a big fan of King Miller and Wayman Jordan. I do like both of those guys. I think they're in this list. I don't know about number 5.
Nope.
Louisville at number 2.
Sure.
Again, Isaac Brown, fantastic. Kewan Brown, fantastic.
I think that's fine. I'm fine with that.
I think that deserves to be on there. Oregon at number 3. Jordan Davison and then De'Aaron Hill. But a lot of that is based off of question marks. The potential is definitely there, but
I'm going to ask a question about this list.
Okay.
How much of this is based on the offensive line? Because I'm looking at these teams.
I would
Oregon,
say a lot of it.
Good offensive line. USC, solid offensive line. Missouri, great offensive line. Texas, great offensive line. Ohio State, great offensive line. Georgia, great offensive line. But we're having this conversation of we're up to the top 3, and you could still make an argument for Auburn compared to some of these teams. It's legitimately just the offensive line.
Yeah. Texas Tech at number 2. Sure.
Sure.
And then number 1, Miami.
Mark Fletcher.
Yeah.
Good.
But if we're talking an overall room rather than one name, I don't think this list cannot have the Auburn Tigers.
I mean, you could put Byron Brown, Jeremiah Cobb, Nakai Davenport, and Bryson Washington in a field with a 3 running back set. The backfield would still average 1,000 yards rushing.
I don't know. Worth the arguments, worth the frustrations. What we're not frustrated about is it's Friday afternoon. And we'll take a break. We'll come back and wrap up the show right after this.
You are on the line with Kristen Griffin and Trip Upton on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and on the Radio Alabama app.
All right, we're back and wrapping up the free-for-all Friday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. What a fun week it's been, and we appreciate everybody for being here with us, spending some time here with us on this Friday afternoon. And partner, on the way out, I know you were looking at some stats over the break. You were sitting there like a madman on your computer, and so I will let you have your time to shine before the music kicks us out of here.
Auburn rushers last year, not even looking at Omar Mabson or any of the other depth pieces that Auburn brought in, just Byron Brown, Jeremiah Cobb, Nakai Davenport, and Bryson Washington combined for 3,360 yards rushing together and 32 rushing touchdowns together. On top of another 28 passing touchdowns from Byron Brown, a couple receiving touchdowns here and there for guys like Jeremiah Cobb and Bryson Washington. So you're meaning to tell me that that group can't run the football?
And again, the argument of that is, well, Byron Brown, not a quarterback, okay, but Gunnar Stockton is listed for Georgia in this exact conversation for his ability to run the football.
Yeah.
So,
okay, 3,000 rushing yards, that's what Auburn total offense pretty much was last year. Not even, and that's assuming they ran a Navy triple style, like rushing style offense. If you added all those numbers up, literally you're just saying these teams have better offensive lines than Auburn. That's why they're higher. Then don't call it a running back room list. That just frustrates me. We're going to be having a different conversation next year. I guarantee it.
Shout out Spectre. I know you're tuned in talking about that offensive line unit.
Fire me up on the way out of here.
I know, it is. It fires us up, but cools us down knowing that it's weekend time here on the line. Appreciate, again, everybody for being here with us. Wrapping up, what is this, week four or is this week five?
This is week, I think this was week five because we, I think, full month.
Holy cow, yeah.
I think it's more than a full month into... I think it's past the point where we call it weeks. I just think we call it a month.
A month into the new edition of On the Line. And again, so much thanks goes to everybody that's been a part of it. Whether you've texted, whether you've called in, a big time thank you to everybody who has been a part of this show. The final week before SEC Media Days is next week, but we're going to talk all about it coming up next week. He's Trip Upton. I'm Christian Griffin. Again, appreciate everybody for being here with us. Sports are so much better with an opinion, whether you love them, whether you hate them. We're back on Monday to talk all about them, and we hope you'll be there to join us.